Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation. And by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. In-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday, until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 171, October 29th, 2014. It's Halloween for the Ham Nation gang. Hello, everybody. It's October 29th, and it's a day before Halloween. And we got some really cool things happening. Let's move over first to the Catman down in Costa Mesa. Hi, Gordo.
Well, hi, I'm coming by your house, partner, if you think it's the day before Halloween, because it's actually 2 days before Halloween. Hey. So all you trick-or-treaters, hey, go by partner Bob's house for extra treats on the day before. 163 countries, 36 zones, 900 QSOs.
Bravo Alpha 4 Whiskey Lima.
Wow. What a CQ worldwide contest. And for those of you on 10 meters, we heard your dipoles from one end of the coast to the other. Good work. Hey, tomorrow night, W5KUB is going to be hosting Glenn, KW5GP, with Arduino, a special cast from W5KUB, Tom's home center, 8 p.m. Central Time, all about Arduino. November 1, Stone Mountain Ham Fest in Lawrenceville, Georgia. Be there. November 1, the startup of Global24Radio.com. That's WRMI, one of our fans on 93.95 megahertz. No, that would be too high. Make that 93.95 kilohertz on your AM radio dial, shortwave station that says hello to Ham Nation. This coming Saturday, Raytown, Missouri has its get-together, especially for new hams as well. And we've got a new ham organization called the Fresno Area Mentors and Elmers. Look what they do. They have all sorts of live stuff that their new hams put together while they're doing their ham radio classes. Good job. November 1, this coming Saturday, is also the Radio Club of America QSO party. So work many of us that are RCA members. And finally, see Bob Heil at the NICSA Event Center. Bob is going to be at NARCFest in Missouri. And then I'll see all of you in New Jersey, November 15 and 16 for the KJI Open House. And then the 17th to the 21st, look for me around New York City, Staten Island, Long Island. I'll be there. And Saturday, November 22, Radio Club of America. So, partner Bob, trick or treat, back to you. Happy Halloween.
Well, they started trick-or-treating here last night. Great, great costume, and thanks for all the news. And let's go down to Mississippi. Here's the winner, I think. George, how are you?
Hello, Bob. Meow, meow, Gordo. Oh, HR Puffin stuff, I think. I'm not sure. You know, there's a party going on up in here tonight, so you'll just have to come back to me later and see what's happening. But great to see everyone again this week, and looking forward to an exciting Halloween episode.
Well, I am too. I'm almost afraid to go down to New Orleans because we don't know what Don's going to do. So let's go. Don, how are you?
You people are in dire need of medication. I've got just exactly what you need. Nobody likes a cold one.
Yes. No heartbeat.
Wrong end, Don.
Oh, sorry. I'm not that kind of doctor, but thanks.
Uh-oh, get out the sensor button.
That's right. Oh, so much fun. So much fun. I drug out my my cowboy hat, and this hat was given to me by the one and only Charlie Daniels, and he's had it in, embraced inside. So I got out the microphone that we built special, and it's kind of special. I forgot about this. George Jones also signed it. Charlie signed it. Joe signed it. It's just kind of a little special memento of something. And I thought, well, we're going to be in the country mode here tonight. I'd get out my camo microphone because you see a lot of camo here in the Ozarks. But, we're having fun tonight. And as I said, the kids have been out here for a couple of days. They had a big deal here the last couple of days at the zoo. And the zoo's just not very far from us here. But we're going to have a great show tonight. Coming up, we're gonna hear some more from George, of course, but he's got a special video from Randy, and we never know what's gonna happen there, but we'll find out. And then Valerie's got a report on something. I'm not sure. It's just excitement from Valerie, and we're gonna come back to you after Gordo. I worked a contest this week, but I did it on that stuff, and it was really cool. So we're going to tune it up and show you how we did it. It was cool. Gordo, let's hear what else you got. You got a whole bunch of stuff from Kansas City, I think. So let's go check out the Jamboree.
We do. And Brian will get you keyed up with the Joda Smithville Lake, Missouri Jamboree on the air. North Star District Scouts did a great job, thanks to JD N0IRS. We need more kids in ham radio. That is one of the subjects that Carol Perry and I will talk about at the RCA banquet in a few more weeks. But right now, let's tune in to Missouri and watch the Scouts in action.
Good morning, everybody. This is Keith Kaiser, WA0TJT, coming to you from the North Star District, part of the Heart of America Council, Boy Scouts of America Jamboree on the Air, 57th annual event. This is my 16th annual event out here at Smithville Lake, Missouri. Today we were operating three HF stations on a variety of modes. We have some JT65 going, some PSK going. We're also doing sideband, of course, on all of the scout frequencies. We're running VHF and UHF, and we're even giving Echolink a try. We have some SSTV planned for later on. About 1,000 kids to show up for the day. I hope to get every one of them on, but realistically speaking, I think we'll get about half of those on. This is Keith Kaiser, WA0TJT.
We had a busy day talking to scouts about amateur radio. And here's Vince, KA0AIG, putting a young Weebo scout on the air.
Just a second. I'm handing the mic over now.
Okay. Hello, my name is Zach, and I'm a Cub Scout, Weebo 1.
Keith, WA0TJT, had the opportunity to explain balloon launching and the Near Space Adventure Program.
...that are on board all come down back down to Earth. But even after the balloon burst...
And here's just a couple of contacts made by scouts throughout the day.
My name is Luke. I'm fifth grade in Trooper 360. Alright, well, last night I was freezing my butt off. I guess I forgot to zip up my sleeping bag.
Tell them a big story.
Hello, my name is Sam Speck. I'm age 11. I'm from Troop 495. Yeah, one time my sister broke my arm. She dropped me.
How old are you?
I went 8 hours without telling anybody. Yeah, it did.
In addition to Jamboree on the Air, there was rock wall climbing.
Are you guys learning?
Cooking. And yes, of course, dishwashing. The catapult construction and distance competition was the main weekend event with over 30 entries. There was an RC model airplane training session and even a witch buzzing the area prior to Halloween. The Jota crew was fed by a group of young adventurers, which we indeed appreciated. And if you had a sweet tooth, here is the ingredients that would later go into a Dutch oven for a yummy dessert. The evening ended with a lakeside campfire and skit performances by the scouts. It was an absolutely great weekend for scouting and Jamboree on the Air. For Ham Nation and the Jamboree on the Air event at the Kelsey Short Youth Camp, Smithville, Missouri, I'm J.D. Dupuy, N0IRS. Thanks for watching.
Terrific. JD and Keith, thank you both so much for a great trip down Jota Lane and your Smithville Lake, Missouri ham radio operators. Great job with Jota. Well, one of the things we're going to be doing back in New Jersey is working with instructors on teaching kids to get their license. And those instructors that are there in New Jersey, as well as those that write in, getting one of my books, we want you to switch over to the Gordo book, and we're going to help you teach more kids to get into ham radio. So that's my meow report, Bob. Back to you.
That was great. And thanks, JD. That was really great. JD just bought another new camera, so he just continues to get better and better. So we really appreciate all your time, because I know firsthand just a little bit of it, but oh boy, that editing is ridiculous. It takes a lot of time. Oh. Well, we're going to go listen to, I think it was George that did this nice ad for ICOM, our friends at ICOM. Here we go. George, take it away.
2014 marks the 50th anniversary of ICOM Incorporated. To celebrate this milestone year, ICOM is releasing two limited edition radios, the IC7850 HF 50 MHz transceiver and a special ID51A VHF UHF dual band handheld. These models are limited in quantity and include innovative features that you can only expect from ICOM. The IC7850 is the pinnacle of HF perfection. There will only be 150 units available worldwide. This limited edition radio has vibrant gold accents, and each unit will have a 50th anniversary limited edition plate. Features include a 1.2 kHz optimized roofing filter for improved in-band adjacent signal performance and excellent dynamic range, a new local oscillator design with a CN ratio that excels beyond the competitors and creates a new benchmark for phase noise with an amazing -150 dBc/Hz at 10 kHz offset and 140 dBc/Hz even at 1 kHz offsets. There are also several new scope enhancements, such as an improved spectrum scope for faster sweep speed and better accuracy, a dual scope function to simultaneously see activities in both receivers, a high resolution spectrum scope screen, and enhanced mouse operation for the spectrum scope. The ID51A unlocks the power of D-Star from the palm of your hand. Only 5,000 units are available worldwide. This radio will feature the words 50th anniversary on the front interface. It comes in blue, green, red, white, and black limited edition colors. The special edition features include faster data transfer in DV mode, RSMS1A Android app compatibility, additional D+ reflector link commands. Other enhanced digital features include DV and FM repeater search and DPRS functions, and a long antenna supplied for optimal receive performance. Make sure you visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM's 50th anniversary limited edition IC7850 and ID51A.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation and throw your name in the hat for some great prizes from the ICOM swag store. And you'll also be entered in the monthly grand prize drawing, which is always a radio. And for October, the grand prize is going to be that new ID51A 50th anniversary edition we just saw there. A dual band, dual watch, 5-watt handheld with rich D-Star features, integrated GPS features, automatic repeater list up, micro SD card slot, and a lot more. So go to iComAmerica.com/HamNation after this episode and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win, because somebody's going to win it. Well, Bob, I worked a little DX yesterday. You know, I was doing a little traveling, and I got on 10 meters, and boy, it's been open all week. I worked Germany, and I also worked Italy just while driving yesterday. But you've been doing a little unique DXing too, haven't you?
Yes, I did. But first, Valerie, why don't you go check your antenna, do something, because you don't want to watch this, because I'm going to get really slammed after she sees this. But I want everybody to realize this is what we had to do in the 1950s and 60s, separate transmitter, receiver, and all this good stuff. So here we go. This is my beloved 20A working a little DX on the contest. Let her roll, Brian.
Let's go through the Central Electronics 20A a little bit, see what's happening. First of all, you have to realize this is a transmitter only. You put it on the band. There's a band switch with the coils, of course, for each band. You will tune that up. You select whether you want CW, FM, AM, or upper lower sideband, and your speech level, microphone level. This is a carrier null, so we can monitor to reduce the carrier. So let's fire it up here. It's not going out over the air. It's just going into the input of the amplifier. And you'll notice we tune it with the little, what they call electric eye. Those were quite prevalent in the 50s and 60s. And replaced to a meter. Now, that's full carrier. That really, when we put this in AM, that's AM. But we don't want to do that. We have to select one of the sidebands and get rid of the carrier. And we do that simply by rotating the carrier control down to zero. Set the speech level, and we're ready to go. Hit the foot switch. I have it hooked up to a foot switch. And we're ready to go. One other thing we have to do is set the VFO. VFO for this was originally a transmitter built for World War II. It was used in airplanes and jeeps for communications, BC-458. But Wes Shum built this really nice box that you could put it into that matched the 20A. And it's band switching. All the coils and stuff are in that VFO kit. We're going to go on the 80-20 meter band that uses the same. And we simply adjust the frequency that we want, and away we go. But, of course, how do you know where you are? You have to monitor it on the receiver, and you'll hear all this when we get started. One other deal is this puts out about 8 watts. So we need some power. Amplifiers of today, it's tough to find anything that will use anything less than about 50 watts. So Wes Shum built a matching amplifier, the 600L. Let's go look at the 600L. The 600L is one of my prized possessions. It was built in 1956. Uses 1/8-13, will do about a half a kilowatt with 5 to 8 watts driving it. And all you have to do is turn on the high voltage and select the band. Just the band switch is all we have to select here. We're going to go down here and put it on 20 meters. That's it. The other switch is a meter switch. We can look at reflected power. Because in these days, we didn't have SWR meters. And this was quite a revolution that we could look at our reflected power on a meter And then we had RF amps, and of course, grid drive, and watts input. So I usually use it on the output, so I looked at the output. And we're ready to go. We're going to put about 8 watts into this thing. We'll have about a half kilowatt on the antenna. Central Electronics 600L tied to a Central Electronics 20A exciter. Let's go work some DX. Okay. Now I have to set the VFO. Put it in calibrate. Okay. Already. K9 Echo Italy Delta. Yeah, thank you. 5904. That's how it's done with a 1958 Central Electronics, a Jeep VFO. Yes, it was a VFO made for the back of Jeep and airplanes in 1940s, and a good old 1959 Collins 75A4. I do have a modern day Force 12 antenna out there, but isn't it fun? No, it's not transceive, and you got to go through a lot of work, but no, it is fun. Sorry, I love all this old stuff. You got to do it the hard way, but you know what? Sometimes it's the best way, especially us for us old dude. I thought you'd enjoy seeing how we have to work DX with vintage equipment. Maybe we'll go do another one. Let's see what happens. Okay. Put it in the manual mode with the foot switch. Yes, Echo Italy Delta.
Echo Italy Delta 5905, don't you?
Yeah, 5904. Thank you.
Wow. That's great, Bob.
I'm sorry. I just love that stuff. Oh, somebody in the chat room, yes, there's 5 coax relays because each one of these transmitters have to have its own coaxial relay, and I have an amplifier after each one of them, so I don't have to switch all of that, and all I have to do is switch microphone panel, and I'm ready to go. But, oh, it was fun. But think about that. Working a contest, you have to spot each station you hear, and after you get on frequency, then you can work them, and then you go find somebody else, and none of this transceive stuff. I'm gonna get ripped. I know when Valerie comes on here, but I had a lot of fun working the guys. I wasn't on very long, but I did have fun. So, what can I say, Don? You want to take my heartbeat? It's pretty good, let me tell you, because I'm really having too much fun, Don. Take her away down there.
Wow, I bet you are. That's amazing. That's cool. I mean, I want another tube type radio so bad. I sold my old Swan years ago, and I should have never done that. But let's go from the old stuff and the tube type and the manual tune to the 21st century. Arduino for ham radio. Tom Medlin, W5KUB, he's going to have, as Gordo mentioned, the author, Glenn Popiel, KW5GP, the author of Arduino for Ham Radio. He's going to be on tomorrow night, 8 o'clock Central, that is 0100 UTC, for a live webcast. And there will be questions and answers and prizes in the chat room and all kinds of things. W5KUB.com is where you want to go. And I believe that John Amadeo, NN6JA, the producer of Last Man Standing is going to be there as well. So check that out tomorrow night, W5KUB.com, 21st Century Radio, Arduino, putting your computer and ham radio together to do wonderful things. And let's check out and see what the news of the week is from Amateur Radio Newsline, shall we?
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 1941, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, October 29th, 2014. The ARRL Executive Committee has adopted an updated policy statement on amateur radio mobile operation.
While agreeing that driver inattention is a leading cause of auto accidents and that concern over driver distraction is not unreasonable, the policy cites amateur radio's 70-year history of two-way mobile operation as evidence that such radio use does not contribute to driver inattention. The policy statement goes on to point out that amateur radio operation differs from cell phone communications in part because the devices need not to be held to the face to listen. Also, no text messaging is involved, and mobile ham operators need only to pick up a microphone to make brief and infrequent transmissions. Prompting the policy update is the 2012 federal law titled Moving Ahead for Progress in the 21st Century, or MAP 21. The ARRL is urging states or localities to adopt motor vehicle codes that narrowly define the class of regulated devices in order to specifically exclude amateur radio from their jurisdiction.
That's Jim Davis, W2JKD, reporting. A new pact will permit cross-border handheld radio communications between the United States and Canada for those involved in public safety issues in both nations.
FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler and Industry Canada Senior Assistant Deputy Minister Kelly Gillis have signed an agreement allowing public safety officials who cross the U.S. and Canada border to use their handheld radios in either country. The agreement, called a Statement of Intent between the FCC and Industry Canada, expands roaming privileges originally granted to public safety officials in a 1952 treaty. The big difference here is that the new Statement of Intent allows public safety officials to operate handheld radios in the other country, whereas the 1952 agreement only contemplated the cross-border operation of radios installed in public safety vehicles. The Statement of Intent also eliminates the need for the host country to issue permits to public safety officials crossing the border, provided the radios used by such officials are licensed in their original country of origin.
If you enjoy amateur astronomy, how would you like to try your hand at being an amateur cosmic ray particle observer?
Scientists at two campuses of the University of California are looking to get voluntary public support in their efforts to measure and track what they term as the unimaginable number of cosmic ray particles that bombard the Earth every second of the day. And all anyone needs to participate in this research is a smartphone with a camera and the researchers' new cosmic rays found in smartphones, or CRAFIS app. The app works by recording and tracking every time one of these particles hits a smartphone camera sensor. This effectively turns the device into a pocket-based detector, computer, and data recorder. By creating the app and making it available to the general public, the scientists believe that they can remotely gather data to build larger databases than they could ever possibly compete on their own. Now, right now, what's been calling the CRAFIS group is letting people sign up for beta versions of that app that's available for both the Android and the iOS platforms in an attempt to gather a sufficient number of volunteers. They say that the challenge is to create a willing user base with a dense enough area to gather all of the required data.
You'll find a link to more information in the full edition of this week's Amateur Radio Newsline Report. If you'd like to sign up, the easiest way is to search CRAFIS group on Google. And finally this week, the first group of Russian smart mini-satellites should be launched into orbit in 2016.
A number of Russian universities and space industry companies are expected to create a specialized aerospace association, one which will work on creating software to control groups of mini-satellites and improve their ability to interact with one another. Last month, Sergei Pashky, who is the chairman of the Presidium of the Tomsk Scientific Center, announced that Russian scientists were planning to create unique mini-satellites capable of group interaction. The satellites will be similar to the CubeSats that were developed in the United States, but would be able to self-educate and repair each other without leaving the Earth's orbit. This is quite a step forward in miniature satellite design. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD reporting.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news, brought to you each and every week for over 35 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. For Jim Davis, W2JKD, and Heather Emby, KB3TZD, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. All right, that's good stuff, especially the cosmic ray stuff. That just thrills me to no end. All right, well, we looked at the old way of ham radio with Bob's old 1950s stuff.
Let's talk about some more 21st century stuff. And we're going to talk about DX engineering. Do you have your new DX engineering catalog? Well, I want you to turn to page 26 because we're going to talk about something really cool. We're going to talk about the ALS 1306 amplifier from Ameritron. It wasn't all that long ago that, you know, messing with an amp was finicky and a temperamental piece of gear. You had to constantly fiddle with it and adjust it. Well, Ameritron stepped up to the plate, and now high-quality set-and-forget amplifiers. In fact, Ameritron's raised the bar even farther with the new ALS 1306 1200-watt amp. You can only get it at dxengineering.com right now. Full HF coverage, yes, that's 6, 10, 12-meter bands with no modification and no tuning between the bands. Solid state, so there's no warm-up period. You get 1,200 watts of clean PEP power. High-quality low-pass filters suppress your output harmonics beneath the FCC rules. And the ALS 1306 has instant automatic band switching. It can follow your radio. That means you can move it off your desk, put it down on the floor, and free up just a ton of useful space. And the front panel control lets you easily adjust power levels. It has a handy 12-volt output to power extra accessories you might have on your desk. It's a whisper quiet internal fan, so it's not gonna blow you out of your radio room either. And has its own power supply, can run 110 or 220 volts. Built-in remote amp keying as well, so when you buy your radio's correct interface cable, and DX Engineering has just a ton of those interface cables, so you can your most popular radio model will fit right on there. And right now, you can only get this brand new amp from DX Engineering. Quantities are limited. It's the initial production run. So if you want to get one of the very first ones, you get it right now at DX Engineering. Of course, complete specs on the Ameritron amplifier. This one and all of them are at dxengineering.com. And of course, like I said, page 26 of the Nifto Swifto DX Engineering catalog. Do you have yours yet? Well, you need to get on it and get you one. DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. If you get your order in by 10 p.m. Eastern tonight and it's in stock, it'll be on a truck headed your way tonight. Proven products, expert advice, DX Engineering helping you shrink the globe. Grab your catalog, the brand new one right here, 24/7. Shop online too, dxengineering.com/hamnation. dxengineering.com/hamnation. A fine supporter of this very program, and we could not be happier. George, I don't want you to burn your hair with your soldering iron. So for God's sakes, don't let Jim, you know, your friend Jim, don't let him anywhere near you with the torch, all right?
Oh, I won't, Don. And thanks for the report there, Doc. We're doing a lava lamp experiment tonight here. And
Lord.
No soldering irons involved. It's a light bulb that's heating everything. I just got off another show right before Ham Nation tonight. I was on Satellite Nation with Brian and Michael over there. And hopefully some of those viewers tuned in here to Ham Nation tonight. Bob, you've been on with those guys before, haven't you? Maybe he's on there with them right now.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah. I've seen it,
George. It's great. It's a great show.
Oh, yeah. I've got a video here from our friend Randy, K7AGE, tonight. You remember that little mixer Bob showed us a few weeks ago? And then last week, we had a viewer send in some photos of one he built. Well, Randy's building one himself, and he's going to take us through the construction details, and tonight he's going to start out with making the cabinet.
Hi, Randy, K7AGE. In Ham Nation show 164, Bob showed us a passive audio mixer that he built years ago.
Well, we talk a lot about audio and mixing things here, and it's a four-channel line mixer. Now, understand, we're talking line level. What I use this for is the output of the transceivers, the receiver part, to mix all of those into one powered speaker, the schematic. And it's extremely simple. That is it. And here is the parts list. And I'm going to hold this up, and you can freeze frame this later on from the replay. And
so I thought I would show you guys how to build one of these mixers yourself. So let's get started. This is the box I'm going to use. It's about 8 inches wide, almost 2 inches tall. Top comes off, and we'll mount everything within this box. These are all the parts of the project. I have four 10K pots. Each input will have a quarter inch jack, just like on Bob's. On two of the inputs, I'm also going to wire up a eighth inch jack. And the third and fourth inputs, I'm going to wire up an RCA phono plug. This will allow me to use either quarter inch or eighth inch or RCA cables going into the mixer. On the output side, I will have a quarter inch, just like on Bob's. I will also have a eighth inch and an RCA jack so I can connect to different cables or even multiple devices. Okay, I'm using the LibreOffice Draw program to lay out the metalwork for the mixer. First thing I'm going to do is draw a box rectangle. And I'm going to set the size so I can right-click on that, size and position. And the box is going to be 8.0 inches wide by 1 3/4 tall. And that's the size of the front and back of the box. And I'm going to make the line here a little thicker just to make it a little bit easier to see. Okay, first thing I'm going to do is create a symbol for the pot. I'm going to select and draw a circle. And I'm just going to set the relative size. I'm going to right-click, size and position. And it's going to take a 3/8 or 3.75 of an inch hole in the chassis. So that's relatively the size of the circle. Okay, the next thing I do is create another circle, which is kind of the relative size of the overall pot in the back, including the leads. And I measured that. I know that's 1.5 inches, so 1.5. And now I have that. I also want to make a little couple crosshairs so I know where to put my center punch. So I'm going to select a line, and I'm just going to create a line, say like that, and a line, let's say vertical. Now this is where the drawing tools really come in handy. I can select all of these. If I go to modify alignment and select horizontal centered, it'll do this. And if I select alignment and vertical center, it'll do that. And now I have all these lines and circles brought together. I'm going to select them all, and with modify here, I'm going to select group, and now I have a symbol for the pot. I can hold down the control and drag and make four more of these. And I'm going to say I want the pots to be about 1.5 inches in from the edge. So I'm just going to draw a line to help me set that. And there it is, 1.5 inches. I got lucky. So I'm going to put this, I'm going to draw this over here. And I'm going to set this circle to be right on the edge of that line. And I'm going to, do the same thing. I'm going to draw the line over here. And I'm going to bring the circle down. And I have it set on that line. So now the left and right circles are 1.5 inches from the edge of the box. Now this is where the CAD really helps. I can select all of those symbols and select modify alignment and select the top, bottom, center. That gets them all centered up. And then I can select modify again distribution and move this out of the way. I'm going to select horizontal spacing and bang, now I have all four of those aligned up across the what'll be the front of the box. So to save some time, I'm not going to show you all the steps, but basically I did the same thing. I created symbols for the quarter inch connectors. Use the centering. Now I'm positioning five connectors across the rear, and using the center and the distribution commands, I'm able to get those positioned where I wanted them. Then I had symbols for the quarter inch connectors for the eighth inch and RCAs, and put an extra connector for the output. I created some labels for the front and rear, and I labeled all the connectors. And then I made some small tweaks to get things positioned around just the way I wanted it, and called. So I will save this, and I will print this out, and then we'll transfer these centers to the metal. So here's the printout of what we just laid out. What I'm going to do now is cut these out and tape them onto the metalwork. I have these both cut out now, and what I'm going to do is tape them onto the front and back of the box here, get them centered up and get them straight, and that I'll use this as a guide to do all my drilling. It's pretty straight. I'm just going to tape that on there in the corner, on the edge. Okay, so that's what the rear is going to look like with all the connectors. This is where the pot, you can see the outer circle there. It's centered up and it'll look good. 1, 2, 3, 4. Thank you very much for watching. K7AGE Randy 73.
Uh-oh.
I think you're muted, George.
Yes, I am. I was scared of whatever this is behind me. I'm not sure. We'll have to tune in next time and see what Randy does next. I think it's time to drill some holes. So this project will probably take a few segments there to complete, but looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. Well, I've got something to give away here. You know, last week I asked a question. What is the RMS voltage across a 500-turn secondary transformer and a winding if the 2250-turn primary is connected to 100 volts DC? Now, that was a trick question. Most everybody got it right, but a few didn't. However, Kevin, NA7KR, got it right, and he says it's 0 volts. And that's correct, Kevin. If you put DC on the primary of a transformer, you're not going to get anything out the secondary because the transformer needs AC to work. Well, you will get a nasty little spike out of it when you first connect to DC, but no practical reason to do that. As a matter of fact, we won't get into that, but you can have DC on the primary of a transformer in some cases, and the transformer is really there to block it from getting on the other side, but that's a different case. So congratulations, Kevin. We're going to send you this Chameleon Antenna CHA-ZEP. It's a 75-foot-long antenna, works 160 through 10 meters, I believe, and we're going to get it right out to you, and you can let us know how this thing works out in the real world, because I have not tried this one, so I don't know. But we're looking for a report from you, so congratulations. We'll be sending that right out. For next week, I've got a little kit of parts here. Actually, this is called a J-pole adapter. And what it is the parts that you would need to make a what is called a copper cactus, a J-pole made out of half-inch copper pipe. And these parts are available in a kit, and it comes from Dennis Bartholomew, AF6TR. He produces a little kit called the J-pole adapter. It's at jpoleadapter.webs.com. And you can get one of these on there. You know, one of the, maybe one of your entry-level projects, after you build that quarter-wave dipole, you might want to build you a 2-meter J-pole. And this would be a great way to start right here because he's already got the hard parts taken care of. And you just buy your little pipe, stick it together, and got you a nice 2-meter antenna there. So if you'd like to win this, answer this. What is another name for a J-pole antenna, and why does it have that name? So if you think you know the answer to that, send your answer to me at hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could be next week's lucky winner. And now I think we want to bring Valerie in for a little DX excitement.
Thanks, George. It's really hard to look at you and keep a straight face. Hey, everybody, it's Valerie Envy at 9L. Well, actually, no, tonight I'm Bart Starr's niece, Dee. Get it? I'm Dee Starr. Well, hopefully you guys then follow me on the LOTW series, and you've got your LOTW cards in the mail with your code. And so now I'm going to show you the next step to get registered for LOTW. Well, I hope by now everybody received their postcard in the mail from LOTW. If you did and you turn it over to the back, it's going to list the website you're going to need to go to in order to enter your call sign and your password that they gave you on the card. It's this address right here. And once you get there, make sure you put in your call sign. And then it's going to ask for your password. And that's going to be that 8-digit, mostly letters. There may be a number or two in there. Passcode above the address line. enter that and click there, and now it has requested your certificate electronically, which you should have on your LOTW page within a few business days. So after those 2 days, you should have an email, and you're going to want to open that up and go to the very bottom of the email. There's a blue link to click. Click on that, and that's going to bring you here, which is also this URL right here. Also noted on that email is a brand new password entered, not the same codes you put in from that postcard. It's a whole new password, so make sure you enter that here. And then go ahead and log in. And then go over to the Your Account section there on the top right. And in there, you can go to the certificate area and click on Download the Certificate. Now you see it downloading there at the bottom. Once that is done, you can minimize this screen and bring up your QSL icon that you set up on LOTW Part 1. Go into the certificate tab at the top there, and that first option to upload your certificate. My downloads automatically go to a download folder, so go there, see the icon there, click that, and hit the open button at the bottom. And follow the instructions. And now you have a valid certificate. All right, next thing we're going to do is set up your home location information. You can set up multiple locations. Like when I lived in Wisconsin, I'd sometimes come down to Jerry's and operate, so I had two set up, so I knew which county I was in when I operated. So this one, you're going to put in your grid square, your ITU zone, and your CQ zone. Now, if you don't know what those are, it should show it on your QRZ page in the details section. Once you enter that, go in and put in your state, and then your county. And hit your next button. And then you're going to want to label that one, like home QTH or home or whatever. And there you go. You have that one all set up. Now let's go back to your LOTW page. I recommend you change your password. You could store it because it's a weird digit thing that you'll never remember. But what happens if your computer goes down or you're somewhere else and need to log in? So I like to change it to something I'm going to remember. And since it came via email, who knows how secure that was, it's just a good idea to change that password. And then store it, and you're good. TW Part 2. Now get ready. I'm going to be doing an LOTW Part 3, and I'm going to show you guys how to upload an ADIF file into LOTW. And for you paper loggers out there, I'm also going to show you how to get those paper logs uploaded to LOTW. So stay tuned for that. Now, I have a quick note for you, Bob. Ray from ICOM and 9 Juliet Alpha, he wants me to remind you to make sure you upload your logs from contesting last weekend. No matter how small, make sure you upload those. As far as DXing goes, X-Ray, X-Ray 9 Oscar, and X-Ray, X-Ray 9 Radio are in Macau right now, Brian, if you want to show that photo. Look at that. It's like Vegas, but on steroids. I mean, it's just south and west of Hong Kong, and it's very difficult to operate from there because it's such a noisy location. In Macau, there's lots of power line and electrical interference, so if you are working them, please be patient as they try to get your call right, especially if you're working them on the low bands. Also coming up is Tromelin. How beautiful is that? They're going to be Foxtrot Tango 4 Tango Alpha. And they're going to be starting up within the next few hours, hopefully. They plan to be there October 30th, which in UTC time is right now. And they're going to be running until November 10th. It's in the Indian Ocean, north of Madagascar. So it's a pretty long haul to the States. And this is number 8 on Club Log's Most Wanted list. And that's for DXing. As far as contesting goes, anybody who turned the radio on this weekend probably figured out that CQ Worldwide Sideband was going on, which is the granddaddy of all contests. We actually got on the air this past weekend. We were using my call. We were multi-single, meaning we had multiple operators. There were four of us, and we used only one station. And we managed to work 168 unique countries and made over 3,900 QSOs for 7.6 million points. Not enough to win USA, but fingers crossed, hopefully we won nine land. It was a very interesting weekend for the contest because those of you that follow the solar activity, there was a solar flare on Thursday the size of Jupiter, which hit over the weekend. Now, they haven't seen a solar flare this big in 24 years. So it was very interesting conditions. At one point, 10 meters completely shut down for us. It eventually came back, and boy, it came back with vengeance. So there were a lot of great scores out there, including the K3LR Superstation shown right here. They broke all the records this weekend. They made over 12,000 QSOs and worked 196 unique countries for 32.8 million points. Now, they were multi-multi, which means multiple operators and multiple stations. So at some point, they probably had about six stations going. But if you look at that photo, that's sort of the who's who of contesters, including to the left of Tim Duffy from DX Engineering. If you recall, the Delta Lima 1, Quebec, that's Sandy from Germany. We interviewed her a few months back for the WRTC, which is the Olympics of ham radio. And here she was back in the States doing what she loved, contesting for the gang. And, well, look at what I got. I got an honorary Team KCLR Breast Cancer Awareness Month t-shirt. So how cool is that? Thanks, guys, for sending me that. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Valerie. Now,
yeah,
we're gonna have
oh,
to make sure.
Oh, that'll go with my new shirt. Oh, that'll be perfect. Get
and
that
I guess
in the
I'll
mail
have
for
to
me
talk,
right away.
I'll have to talk to Tim.
I would have loved to have that this weekend because my ears were hurting after 48 hours of contesting. Now, do you think you need to have one of those superstations to work DXCC in a weekend? Well, think again. Kilo Kilo 9 Hotel. Don Whiteman, who lives in a suburb of Chicago, nowhere spectacular. I mean, he's not on the East Coast with an easy shot to Europe or the West Coast with an easy shot to Asia. He's in the middle, the black hole, as we call it. He wanted to see if he could work 100 countries in one morning using a simple setup and 100 watts. And here's what he used. He used an Elecraft K3, a high gain AV640, which is a vertical antenna for 40 through 10 meters, only 15 feet off the ground, a Heil headset, and a paper log, which is basically a DXCC entity list that he printed off the ARRL website, and 100 watts. So Sunday morning, 6:45 a.m., he fired up the radio. And using only 100 watts would just tune around the band and look for some DX. And if you worked at DX station, he checked it off that printout and kept going. And sure enough, by noon, he worked 102 countries in just over 5 hours. That's really amazing. 100 watts, simple station. So you don't need the fancy superstations to work DXCC in one morning. So how cool is that? Coming up this coming weekend, we have CW Sweepstakes, which is a very active contest. That is a real test of your CW skills because in sweepstakes, the exchanges are intentionally very long. So there's a lot of room for error to get one piece of data in that exchange wrong. So it really is a good test for your CW skills. Also this weekend, make sure you turn your clocks back. I mean, most of you working in the contest using a logging program, you do it in UTC, so it makes no difference to you. But to anyone using any paper logging, make sure you are aware of the fallback. And for those of you wondering which location I selected when I asked you to tell me where to go, Jerry, you know, promised to take me to an island or a country that was kind of rare to get me on the other side of a pileup. Well, we sort of had to put things on hold, but for a good reason. Because Jerry was selected to be one of the 15 operators going to Navassa KP1. Now, this was just announced in the last month, within the last month, and they're going in January. So they have less than 3 months to get everything together and in place by January, which is a difficult task. And that means you guys need to make sure you get everything in place so you can work these guys. Navassa is number one on Club's Logs Most Wanted list. It's been over 20 years since somebody's been on that island. So make sure you got them and get them at least on one band, because who knows how long it's going to be till somebody goes back again. And that does it for me for my DXing and contesting segment. I'll see you in a couple weeks. I'm going to pass it over to Amanda to see what kind of questions everybody has for us from the chat room. Amanda.
Thank you, Val. It, nice costume, by the way. Love it. Love it. Anyhow, oh, by the way, joining me tonight, Sunny, or other people know him as Crockett. Hello. Say hi, Jeff.
From Miami.
I had to promise him like an expensive radio piece of equipment to get him to do that. I'm sorry. Okay, I'm sorry, you guys. All right. I do. Val, first question is for you. And this is for me personally. So I was working the DX contest this weekend. And I have to know, why did DX stations never sit on top of a normal frequency? So they're not going to sit on 7190. They might sit on 7190.9. Why did they do that?
Well, they could be on 7191, but I notice sometimes when they're far away, it's kind of off frequency on our end here. But those bands, I don't know if anybody noticed, they were chock full. And 7191, the QRM was too bad from somebody on 7192.5. So they just went a little bit down. If they went too far down, then they're too close to the guy on 7189. I mean, you really have to kind of dig a tiny hole because the bands are just chock full of stations. I mean, your filters are working full time in that contest for sure.
Definitely. And with the 7600 now, we have those great filters. So I'm really excited.
Yeah, how's
about
that working out for you?
Oh, I can't even talk enough about how much we love it and how much we can narrow a band down to actually just listen to the station we're trying to work instead of the QRM around it. Oh, it's amazing. You guys, I've been missing out this whole time. I had no idea. Thanks, Val. Let's see. I have a question for Bob. Bob, K2AD Doug would like to know, how important is a 1 kilohertz tone in ham radio?
That's what you use to test. In fact, in the scopes that I have from some of the old stuff, it's got a 1KC tone already built in. The Kenwood scope's got a couple of different tones. It's very important to have a 1KC tone. And of course, it doesn't have to be a kilocycle, but a good steady tone is a nice tune-up. It works well.
Agreed. Evidently, our repeater guys here use it a lot, and used to drive me nuts to have to hear Jeff using that tone on the service monitor, and I could hear it three rooms away. And he said it's an absolute must. I mean, but I'm covering my ears like this because my dog's going around in circles, so. I don't know. I'm glad you guys use it, but hey, I don't like it. Let's put it that way. Gordo, how have you been?
I've been fine. Meow, meow to your dogs.
Oh, thank you. I love the costume, by the way. That's so cute. Gordo, I've got a G5 RV question for you. Adam, 80AM, he says he has a home-built G5 RV Junior for 40 meters to 6 meters. And would it be better to run 450 ladder line all the way back to my tuner or keep it with only 16 feet and the rest coax?
I believe that most G5 RVs have set coax and twin lead feeder lengths. So if they say 16 feet and then it terminates naturally the coax, don't change a thing. But more important, can he work everybody he hears over S3, not during a contest? So if you hear someone calling CQ that's just above the noise, you go back to him on your G5 RV and they come back to you. That's a great sign of equal signal reports that you've got a great system. But if you call a station coming in S5 and they go, oh man, I hear someone calling, but you're like S0, then you know you may need to take a look at the feed system and go back to the paperwork that came with the G5 and go with that. So I would stay with what normally most of the G5 RV seniors suggest, and that is that short length of twin lead that then terminates over to coax.
Very good. Thanks, Gordo, for that. And, by the way, that reminded me, Val, twice this weekend. You beat me out on 15 meters. I heard you personally work. I think it was Portugal and another country. Anyhow, I was a little frustrated, but you had much better station than me. But anyhow, I got him about 10 tries after that. So that was funny. This I'm going to send this to Gordo as well. K-E-0-A-Y, Andy, he says he's in the military. They taught him how to use resonant lengths of coax for any antenna used. Do any of the guys think this is a good practice? What do you think, Gordo?
Back in the old days of single band CB, there was always using either half wave or quarter wave lengths of coax for the CB band. But now that we're on multi-band antennas, the coax actually is invisible as long as the feed point is properly matched and your transceiver, like the good old ICOM 9100 here, is putting out its 50 ohm impedance, then all will be fine. So I would not worry about coax lengths, especially if you're going to a well set antenna and one where it is multi-band. You can't come up with the right length of coax because being multi-band, every single band has its own characteristics. So just make sure you've got a good feed point, low SWR, and you'll be set to go.
Very good, Gordo. Thanks so much. You know, that's about all the questions I have. Let's send it back to Bob. What do you got for us, Bob?
Okay. Well, I wanted to let let Valerie know I do log all my stuff, and I do it by hand. And I've been doing it forever like that. But what can I tell you? We had a lot of people call and get those T-shirts we had. And I was really happy that Steve found those in our warehouse. And all you guys and gals that got in early, you got them. But when he was there, he found some other historic shirts. When we were, they opened the display at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They did this T-shirt that they gave out. And it's got some of the important dates that we did, the tours and stuff. And he's got some of these left. And if you want to call the Heil plant, you can get them for about $10. It's really cool. It's I don't know how many, not a lot, but just call the Heil plant. You can look on the website or 618-257-3000. But it brings back a lot of memories for me with all of the dates on the back. But they did this specially when they opened the display at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We're the only manufacturer there. I'm really proud of that because all of that, do you see behind me, all the printing, I said one of the things you have to do when you tell the story is you have to tell everybody that I learned all of this from amateur radio. So amateur radio is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I love it. But very, very honored and proud of that. But you can get those shirts. I don't know how many Steve found, but if we call it a plant and they'll fix you up, I think it'd be kind of a nice piece to have. I also wanted to show everybody, there's the relay. There's five of those back here. These are Dow key relays. And you have to have those for each transmitter, the antenna, the receiver, and the receiver, transmitter, and antenna. I'll hook up to that. And that's all the muting. Maybe we'll get into that one of these times, and I'll show you how we hook all that up. Well, I think we're all ready to go out and do some trick-or-treating. Gordo, are you going out, or are you and Susie going to stay home and just hand out candy? What's going to happen?
No, we're gonna be right here working DX and handing out candy.
And Valerie, where are you headed for Halloween? This ought to be good.
Nowhere. No, actually, we're going to go out this weekend. It's our first free weekend, so we're going to go celebrate my birthday at a casino. So we're going to have some fun with a bunch of hams. So I'm a little too old for trick-or-treating, gosh darn. I don't think I'd pass for a kid getting some candy, but I may steal some. I don't know. Like these? Well,
that's what I would do.
Too old candy. Oh, that's great. Nice report tonight. And Amanda, you and Jeff headed out somewhere?
No, no. Jeff actually is going to cover for some guys at work that have kids and they want to take their kids trick-or-treating. So he's been nice enough to volunteer to stay late for them. And I will stay here and I will watch my dog try to bite the kids while I give them candy. That's about as good as I can say it's going to be. So I think we're just going to sit here and eat a bag of Hershey's.
All right. Well, a beautiful couple. I'm really glad we all had fun tonight. The chat room, you were very busy, and I'll have to try to go back and look through it afterwards. I can't keep it all going here while we're doing things. But, boy, we sure appreciate you being there. Any frequencies for the 20 and 40-meter nets tonight?
I'm going to be around 72, looking for contacts, but Garlic Mike will call it, so we'll find out. But tune us up around there.
Yeah, and it's also, around 14.
Go ahead. Yeah, I have it up on behind me here, 14.287 for the 20-meter net for Steve. He's taking early check-ins now.
I think that's Gordle firing up.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm gonna volume down.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see you there too. And then Cheryl will be on our 3847, I would imagine. So we'll see you all next week. Have a good time. And don't forget to time change. We'll be here at the same time. It's been a lot of fun. Happy Halloween. Happy DXing. And just have fun with amateur radio. That's what it's all about. This is K9EID and the whole organization from the TWiT Network. Bye-bye for now.